on 50 cents of the dollar on those types of figures, you know, it's well worth your while to go the long lot, I would think. And we're talking about $1 billion.
Mr. Nelson, with all due respect, Senator, you're making the assumption that the state was absolutely 100% correct in its assessment, and the fact that that was the case is not obviously what we in the industry believe, because as you just said, we are not interested in paying 12% interest. We could borrow our money for significantly less than that, and we could have borrowed it for significantly less at 18%. So I think this characterizes the fact that it is an issue of law. Most certainly it is with Standard. I can't speak on behalf of the other companies. And that is the reason that we are in there at this point. And I can assure you, and I think as the state has said too, we would like to get these issues resolved as soon as possible. Also, we have no reason, none whatsoever, to delay them at all. And we will be paying 12% on whatever is decided, so we have no incentive not to. But I think what you'll find is what was just stated, the settlement that are made with the different companies have issued mainly with legal parts, and then the other thing has to do with price. And that's a very sensitive issue, as was demonstrated by the settlement that ARPA made and the confidentiality, and that makes it very difficult. But we have absolutely no reason not to want to sit down and resolve these things.
I'm just looking for answers, and I'm not being critical of your bookkeeping. But this is an accumulation of not just this year, it's been a number of years. This is something that's been accumulating, hasn't it? So if you had a technical problem as it relates to the law, it seems to me one way to resolve that would be go to the legislature and change that technicality to satisfy their problem. Wouldn't that be correct?
If I could interject here, Senator, one thing that Martin mentioned quickly at the beginning is that this is a steady flow. During the last year, for example, audit assessed $215 million, which has come into this paper, but also going out of these figures was the $243 million in the ARCO settlement. So you're looking at $1 billion now, and you were looking at $1 billion a year ago, but it isn't the same $1 billion. The money is flowing through the system. Just with the ARCO settlement alone, you know, there's 25% of this $1 billion that actually passed through the whole process during the last year. And during that time period, an additional $215 million was assessed. I think the next phase that Carl's going to get to shows the aging, that is how long it's taken us at each step, and Carl's going to explain what we're doing now to speed it up, to get the pipeline, so to speak, flowing a little faster.
Is this a pattern that you've established that we can expect $215 million next January?
You'll have to ask our revenue forecasters.
To answer, I'm sorry.
Well, evidently, one of the problems that was under litigation has been resolved, so that particular stumbling block, that issue has been solved, so there will not be any conferences or formal hearings on that particular issue anymore. Then that's not going to be contested, but maybe it's on something else. But yeah, the net result being that we still have $1 billion tied up.
Yeah, we have. That's well. We've had an accounts receivable balance of about $1 billion now for some time. But it's like a business that is sending out products and getting payment back. You can have a steady accounts receivable balance even though you're constantly getting paid and you're constantly sending out bills. So it has been about $1 billion. And we're going to try and reduce it as much as we can. But there is a flow here. It's not, there wasn't just $1 billion in tax assessments made 5 years ago and nothing's been done about it. These are constant assessments and constant payments. And it's just the overall balance is so large.
Just one more. If in fact we did collect about $243 million, how much did we give up for that? There's bound to be a trade-off somewhere.
There were probably trade-offs. I am not familiar with the settlement, but I'm afraid to say even if I was, I wouldn't be able to tell you about it. And I couldn't tell you the issues. I couldn't tell you what was traded away. I couldn't tell you what wasn't traded away. It's under the statute that's, I'd be sent to jail as a Class C misdemeanor if I were to give you that information.
It may be working.
Hands on worse.
I think that is a real, real problem. This is a real question of public policy, of expenditure and use of public money, but it's something that I think
we're placing a lot of faith in you guys. I'm sure you're doing the best you can for the public interest. But it'd be nice if the public knew what's going on.
I like the business analogy, but you know, when cash flow gets tight in a business, you go after your account receivables. So.
Well, that is exactly what we're doing.
That's
right
why
now.
We're here.
That's why we're here. So.
Yep.
Okay, Mark. Yeah, Mark. On several times during your presentation here, you mentioned if we only had more resources. Of course, we're talking about uncollected revenues. Purpose of this joint committee here is to try to figure out ways to collect some of those revenues, as well as to improve the process to the benefit of the person who's appealing, as well as our assessment. What do you mean by if we only had more resources? I don't want necessarily an answer now, but I'd like you, for this committee, to indicate to this committee in writing what you mean by resources and what could be done that could improve what you're attempting to do. Because this is a type of recommendation that we can deal with amongst our colleagues. And if you can prove that the cost-to-benefit ratio or the cost-to-collection makes sense, then I'm sure you'll have a very willing group of people to consider that. I'd say almost writing the budget.
George, we have a question, I think. How far along are you on the audits? You're only through what year? You're up through... Which years right now?
On oil and gas audits? Mm-hmm. It depends on the taxpayer. There's quite a spectrum there to deal with.
Well, in general, though, for that amount of money that you have in here, my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, other than the ARCO settlement, the majority of the money is there, and you're only through the year of 1978, I believe.
I think it's a little bit further than that with some taxpayers. That's a real difficult question to answer.
Well, what I was trying to do is help you on your resources, because I think that's one of the problems. And
right.
We'd like to see it expedited and moved along, too. We don't care to have this thing sitting there and sitting there. And one of the things that we found was, I think they are somewhat limited on the resources. And the only other thing I like, you know, when I read this, and again, as Senator Ellison's impression is, and would be anyone else that reads this when you see this, that you look over and you say that some of them aren't collectible, and I think maybe a fair way, because the impression is that the state is going, would collect 100% of the $950 million, more or less, and I really don't think that's quite a fair impression to give the legislature or anyone else, because I don't think that it's not a matter of negotiation to try to settle for less money on some. It ends up maybe in that way in some cases for some things. But there are some items that have gone through there that we know of for sure that has been stated to us that are not going to be there because of the laws and so forth. And to me, those should be put down there somewhere or reduced in number, because everyone immediately assumes that the state is owed $950 million and everything is going to come out 100% in their favor, and it's just a matter of time to get that $950 million. I don't think that's true. That's all I'm trying to say. I think in presenting the numbers, it'd be more realistic to show at least something in there other than zero.
Mark? You also mentioned that the grants that you, the charts that you give us don't include the amount collected, and the percentages you have here are the percentages yearly of the total assessments due, or of the assessments due that are appealed and whatnot. Is there another chart that says how much was appealed as a percentage of the total amount? You've collected a certain amount, but it doesn't show up anywhere on the chart from year to year. And it looks like you've got a 5-year scale here. And, you know, like 1 year
due is about $300 million, and then it goes down slightly. Well, the highest one is 1 to 2 years, but I don't get a feel for how much is appealed in any given year as a percentage of what's actually collected.
Okay, if I could address that. First of all, the chart that you're looking at, we need to talk about that a little bit. I don't think it's exactly as you think it is. What the numbers that you have in front of you are from the accounts receivable. These are amounts that have been billed that have not been paid. It doesn't have anything to do with somebody who files a tax return and pays their taxes with the return, or we bill somebody and they pay it. Those numbers aren't on here. These are the numbers, and we've been focusing on the appealed amounts.
Right. I'd like to see the appealed amounts to see how significant that is compared to the total. I mean, we could do it ourselves by going in and seeing what the revenues were, but I don't have it on a chart, and I don't want to have to go through and do that.
I can appreciate that.
So I don't know what significance, you know, $275 million. I could do it quickly, but if I could have it on a quick little chart, so I could see if that was.
If I could just
only 10% was appealed over what was actually supposed to be collected.
Short circuit the process here. The amount that has been collected is the amount that's been in the state's budget for the last 5 years. It's ranged from a high of $3.6 billion, dollars in the 1982 down to our last year's estimated budget, which I think was
But by having that on a chart, we can kind of project the scene. Unless there were significant changes, how much would be added to this kitty next year and the following years? Because there may be a steady rate of appeal that we don't know about compared to what the total revenues are. We've got all kinds of revenue projections, but to this degree, we don't have appeals projections.
Yeah. No, those are, the money that's come in is the money that's been paid.
Right.
And that's the money that the legislature's had in its budget for the last 5 years. So. I'm not sure. I think the total is probably over 5 years about $12 billion. Out of $12 billion, total that was paid, we have remaining, or so far we have about $1 billion in dispute. That would be a rough sense. We could get you some more detailed numbers, but roughly there you have 1/12 of the total sum is in dispute and not paid.
Year to year percentages, I'd like to see.
Michael? Mr. Chairman, the corollary of that question, that is, once the accounts reach this appeal stage, what percentage historically has been recovered?
Gordon,
<What's
your batting laughs> speak up.
What's your batting average?
We don't have any numbers precisely on the percentages that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Would that be something you can do and furnish to the committee?
Be very difficult. A lot of the assessments are paid also without appeal. Some will be appealed and then paid. Others will go through a process of years. And our matching is on a yearly basis. And so you have, when one account is assessed in 1 year and it goes into appeal in another year, we haven't in the past.
Okay. If I may, Mr. Chairman, just by whatever process you use, the intestinal fortitude or anything else, what amount this appeal come, do you think will be recovered in the next 2 years?
What do you think you're banning everything?
I don't think I can really make a guess with respect to the oil and gas income taxes, or the production taxes for that matter. I don't have enough experience with these particular tax ties with any numbers as far as how many have paid anything, because we haven't really gotten any of those numbers. With respect to the others, I would say that we would be well over 50%. Some cases, 80%, 70%, but I would certainly hesitate to give the committee the impression that we anticipate any particular amount that we will eventually collect with the oil and gas taxes. We believe that we have made very legitimate assessments and that we will collect most, if not all. That is our primary premise that we begin with. But I think you have to keep in mind, too, that we have a very competent audit staff. The audit staff is very aggressive, and so they are going to take positions that are most favorable to the state during the course of those audits, and I think that's the way it should be. Now, because of that, some of these dollars may fall out along the way. And with respect to the oil and gas taxes at this point, because of the uncertainty in the past and because we haven't had enough experience as to collectability or settlement of some of these amounts, I really would hesitate in venturing any guess on how much percentage basis that we would collect. We would like to think we would collect 100%, but I think that would be a mistake to think along those lines.
In other words, Carl, go ahead.
To answer the question, you'd be telling George what you could expect to pay, so I understand that.
Sherman, maybe we lack one more column there. Maybe we should have a column showing how many we lost.
Well, Senator, I was going to say that after Bart's question, I'm looking at this 5-6 column. There's no reason why we couldn't have more columns. The first person of the Department of Revenue that couldn't venture a guess, but I understand. But I did hear one percentage figure brought up.
I think they guaranteed us they're not going to collect any more than it's on this page.
I'd like to make a comment about what George Nelson said earlier about the years that are involved. He was correct in stating that a lot of them were not as far along as we could be. And as I mentioned earlier in going through the brief overview, that we have a statute of limitations of 3 years and that it's necessary sometimes to get a waiver with the taxpayer to extend that limitation. And that happens in the majority of cases with oil and gas taxpayers. Because of the resources that it takes to complete an audit, it may take to do a four-year audit a good 4 years with most of that, two or three people, and sometimes as many as five and six people working on one case at a time. So it is a very complex area. I think one of the problems we're having here is we're kind of getting ahead of our handouts and stuff. Perhaps we're not moving along fast enough. But Carl can talk about the aging a little bit and then a little bit about some of the major issues so you get kind of a flavor for the complex nature of the issues, if that's okay.
One question on that. What tolls at the very first assessment or the last assessment or what tolls came? You can only get the 3 years. You can only state it, and then all your revisions have to come of the assessment have to come within 3 years of the very first one?
No, the notice and demand for payment, the first assessment, has to be done within 3 years. Now, what happens subsequent to that is normally, like at the informal conference process, the assessment may be revised and usually downward. But once you have an assessment and enter into an appeal process, the statute it holds at that time.
From the filing of the return, 3 years from the filing of the return to assess.
Right. But I was just wondering if all assessments, I think it was just the first one, or, I mean, the revisions, are you saying that they go down, but it's possible they could go up?
It is true.
So I'm just wondering if those are precluded if you've even met the first one. No, they can go if you had one.
Once you've assessed and during the hearing process, it can be modified as the facts are developed.
If you assessed and the tax was paid and there was no appeals process, then you couldn't assess anymore after that.
That probably will also be an issue somewhere along the line, though, like we anticipate.
Carl, you're supposed to go to something called aging.
The next document that you have with the title of Agent of Appeal Tax Assessments, the value of accounts that is shown in the third column refers again to only those accounts that have been appealed within the Department of Revenue. And the fourth through seventh columns show the time periods in which those values those assessments have really been within the department. For instance, for oil and gas corporate income tax, $275 million has been there less than 1 year. Then the next column shows 1 year to less than 2 years, 2 years to less than 5 years. The last column shows how much of that has been there 5 years or more. Now, what this doesn't show right at the moment is what level these particular dollars are at. And these columns include monies both at the informal conference level as well as the formal hearing level, as well as those dollars that are in court. So it's all of that process included within these particular columns. Just looking at the totals down at the bottom, you can see that about 28% of that of the total value, and here again, the value is tax penalty and interest, but approximately 28% of that has been there only 1 year or less. Then if you drop down to the next section, it follows with the same format as the other pages did. They show the value and the number of accounts. The number of accounts with respect to each of the tax types. Again, those tax types only pertain to tax periods. We could move on to the next page.
Representative Mark, thanks. Didn't mean to interfere, but one other question in mind. When you make an agreement to stop the clock, so to speak, for the 3 year time period, if you stop at 6 months or 5 months, whatever it takes to resolve the problem, is interest occurring at that same time, or is that stopped off?
Interest continues constantly. Interest accrues as a matter of course. We don't have to do anything, and regardless of what happens, whether it's an appeal status or collection status or any other status, if there is a deficiency, up until the time that deficiency is paid, interest will continue to accrue on it, regardless of what status it's in.
Even if the state was the one that asked for a stop?
That's correct. If we ask for an extension, taxpayer extends that period of time for us to do an audit, interest still continues to accrue during that period of time.
Good way to make some money.
Right now, our interest rate is 12%, and I think prime is about 7.5%, so there's a difference in there. That may be tempered somewhat if these dollars were there over a period of time, because we use simple interest. So therefore, the more years that the dollars would be outstanding, the effective interest rate would really be reduced. It would be somewhat less if on a simple rate than it would be under a compound rate. So maybe after 10 years or so, it might have knocked the rate down somewhat to more in line with what the interest rate is now. We hope that those dollars won't be there 10 years from now, though. If I could move to the next page. Page is labeled Oil and Gas Taxes Outstanding on September the 2nd, 1986. And just in passing, the date is different from on those other pages only because different divisions put the information together, and we didn't have the latest numbers on the accounts receivable system at the time we did this, so we used the information that we had on September the 2nd to prepare this chart, which the tax dollars should be the same. But on this particular chart, the interest and the penalty has been left out, just to give you an idea of what we're dealing with in tax dollars, because we hear a lot of talk about $1 billion, and we just want to show you what we have in actual tax dollars if we exclude the penalty and exclude the interest. And if you'll look at the first part, income tax under Chapter 21, about $489 million, and production tax under Chapter 55, we have approximately $95 million, but total oil and gas taxes outstanding in an appeal status of $583 million. Now, of that amount that is currently in an appeal status, you'll drop down to the next section there where under the word in tax assessed within. Within the last 6 months, we have assessed $170 million in tax. Now, that's tax alone. Again, it doesn't include interest or penalty. Within the past 12 months, we have, in addition to that $170 million, we have assessed about $2.2 million. If you drop all the way down within the last 24 months, you'll see $335 million. So overall, with the tax that is currently on the accounts receivable now, of that amount, the tax dollars, and just the tax dollars, 88% of that amount has been assessed, actually assessed, within the last 2 years, in the last 24 months. So I think it points out what has been said here earlier, that the tax is a fluid amount, that you look at it maybe year after year, and you still see a lot of dollars there. But what you don't see is what is going out, because other things are coming in and replacing. And sometimes you may have situations where you get new things coming in, maybe just about exactly with what went out, so it looks like absolutely nothing has happened. So that's not always the case. It can be the case where nothing has happened, but it's not always the case. And I think this reflects that there has been some movement because of 88% of the actual tax dollars have only arisen within the last 2 years. Now, if you drop down to the last part of this page, you'll see the number of all tax accounts, and that should really read number of all appeal tax accounts, 1,426. Now, of those 1,426 tax periods that are in an appeal status now, 525 are at the informal conference level and 86 are at the formal hearing level, a total of 611 accounts. So if you look over at the very end of the page on the right-hand side, you'll see that 42.84% of all of our cases represent Chapter 21 income tax and Chapter 55 production tax. So you can see we have over 50% of the appeals in an appeal status relating to non-oil and gas matters, and we still have to handle those cases along with the oil and gas cases. And to some extent, we have prioritized our work that we have, and to the extent that we slight some of these areas, make some people unhappy. But we're right now prioritizing our work mostly into the oil and gas area and away from some of the other areas that we eventually will pick up as we go along.
Would you like us to go on? We had prepared to talk a little bit about the appeals process, the length of time that it takes to go through each level, and to talk about some of the major issues and some of the things that we've been doing as far as reallocating resources internally within the Division of Audit. Perhaps that's not necessary. If you'd like us to put that in writing, the reallocation of resources and what additional resources are needed, what would you like us to talk about at this point? You want to hear about the issues or anything?
I think at this time, unless there's some questions in relation to the topic that you brought up, if you could just put it in writing, we do have some material here. And of course, the topic is uncollected taxes. And I'm serious when I said I'd like a recommendation from your shop relation to your comment on resources. We only had the resources. And then convince this committee here that for every dollar we invest, we'll get X number out at the end. Was there any member of this committee that would like to hear any further through the appeals process? Terry?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I think what you've been here and what we've seen from, well explained, the process and so on, I was interested though, and what he did suggest, and some of the major issue of hang-ups, why is it that we're hung up on certain oil companies agreeing? They particular things, I don't even know what to guess at. This has become a major issue in their taxing. This has become a major issue. Or is it a whole spectrum?
There's really a whole spectrum of issues. This is it's a very complex area. I think, going back to the resources, I think it's important to really note at this point that what we intend is dependent upon, what we intend to do to resolve the problem is dependent upon a number of things. But I would probably be remiss at this point if I didn't say that one of those things that we really need is the assistance of the Department of Law with the Department of Revenue as we proceed through this. So if there's any reduction, for instance, in the funding of the oil gas mining unit within the Department of Law, that's going to impact us too. So it's not just audit resources that we need. Because of the complexity of the issues, we do have the assistance of the Department of Law to work with us on these cases. And because of the dollars that are involved, that it's very important that the state's interests be protected and that we have that those resources available to us. Now, we are within revenue trying to maintain on our staff people with legal experience because of the nature of the cases that we deal with and because of the fact that the formal hearing is where the record is made and that's what goes into court later. And if a bad record is made, well, then we have to live with that just like the taxpayer does. But we're trying to, within appeals, to have at least two of our people work on the cases together on a team approach we would like to have someone on that team with a little bit of legal experience. Right now, we have two people that are working exclusively in oil and gas within the appeals branch. One of them is an attorney, the other is a CPA, and we have received authority and funding for two other positions, which we're going to move in and hire and hopefully compose another team. We don't know whether we'll be able to get any legal experience there. But we're, like I said before, we're also moving in from the field two auditors on a full-time basis to help us with appeals work. We have another auditor that we're moving, that we have moved from the field that will work on a part-time basis with us. But
you can't say that it's certain blocks of concern, whether it be the way we calculate taxes, the way they calculate it, what the tax means, or what royalty means. It just seemed to me that it can't be 500 different issues. You may, with the oil company, it's just three or four major concerns that the department often help with.
There are some major concerns, but within those major concerns, there are a lot of very complex issues within each one of those. We have the point of production, the major issues dealing with the point of production, the sales value, the substitution of prevailing value for the sales price, the transportation costs, and what all is involved in it, in the net back and determining the transportation costs, the rate of return questions. It's really quite detailed when you get into it. And I don't profess to know all of the issues, to even understand all of them myself at this point, but that's one of the reasons why that we do have very good people on staff that are working on these. We do need the assistance of the Department of Law, and as we go along, we will resolve these cases, but it's going to take a little bit of time with the resources that we presently have.
Can you give us a list of the issues that are being contested under contest?
Yes, I think we can do that.
Just a short memo outlining what all the points of contention are would be, if we can't do anything about it, at least give us some peace of mind to know that everything is being attacked.
We can assure you that.
Senator? I suspect maybe the oil companies all have different methods of keeping their books, and there's no standardized procedures. This is one of the must be very complex. You have some real smart people on the other side too. They're doing their best to protect their interests.
That's probably and, by design.
But it seems to me that maybe through legislation we could simplify the process. Put it on one page, say this is what you owe at the end of the year. Take it or leave it.
Fisheries too, could we not?
There's already profit there to tax.
George, I think you wanted to say something.
I don't know, after those two statements.
That's fine. Any other questions?
George, I wonder if the letter that was written by Bruce to Pat Bershow, dated January the 20th, subject was expediting collection of disputed taxes. Is that a fair summary of some of the problems? Things that you're not privy to the letter.
Well, I'm sure I've read it in the past.
It pointed out a lot of things at yeah. what he was saying, and some of the things that was in there was the delays that do occur often result from strategy decisions exercised by the state to select the best test case to litigate. Additionally, stays and consolidations pending decisions in other jurisdictions on the same issue cause delay but result in saving non-reimbursable administrative costs. What he's saying is most of the things that come up and survive the initial stages of the appeal concern issues of first impression. In other words, he's saying both the state and the taxpayers want quick resolution of the issues because they do impact the state's tax administrative process. But what he's really trying to say is I don't think that we the taxpayer, are trying to present appeals that don't have some basis, and that a lot of that gets handled in the informal process. He's saying then the ones that do go by past that do have some substantial basis for why we were trying to appeal
the assessment. But if those just require a clarification in the law, or as soon as they let us know, we could probably help you out.
Simplicity is our best.
Carl, Mark,
that's it.
Okay, we have Senator?
Just one other question. It still bothers me a little that there's so much information that that's not made available to people who are supposed to make these decisions, or at least we think we're supposed to make them. Now, during the litigation, I understand a lot of that is in secret also, that we had a very difficult time knowing what was going on as you're going through this process. All we really were of what came out the other end, because maybe jeopardized your case, or maybe it's because of confidentiality, I don't know, but it seems like general public and legislators themselves, are really in the dark, not only within our system, but within the court system. So, this is really a serious, there is a lot of concern over that, and rightly so. I think that there must be a way we can shed a little light on it without violating a lot of privacy rights.
We had a bill headed your way.
I would just to say it also, the confidentiality also frustrates us in telling the legislature what we're doing, and the people at the Department of Revenue, there's a very talented, very capable, very hardworking people, and it's frustrating to work on something 12 months of the year, 5 days, 6 days a week, and not be able to tell anyone what you're doing. So
I wish I could do that.
The problem is the Alaska statutes, written by the legislature, and the Alaska statutes can be changed by the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Resurrect that bill.
Confidentiality really is the problem. That confidentiality statute.
What tool is that? What are you open caucuses?
We tried to send you a bill.
Didn't we send one to the Senate?
Yeah, we sent you one.
I think it's in the Senate. It's the Senate License Committee that had it there.
Must have been something else on it.
Well, the world.
Okay, Carl
and
Mark, thank you.
All right,
thank you. We have concluded basically our agenda that we had before us. And as I indicated in the beginning of our presentation today, that I would like this body to consider coming back and discussing amongst ourselves with people who are knowledgeable in the background to assist us when we have a question, to maybe discuss some of the options that we have before us in relation with what we can do with it. We could repeal it. We could take it off from Prudhoe Bay, modify it. There's countless things we could do. And so if we take all those options, now we had some fancy options that were proposed at one time by one department or the other. I think it's something that this committee should sit down and talk about. But what would happen if we did this?
George? I would like to say, and I know that that's a very reasonable request to discuss the various aspects of health, but I think we need to be sure we're looking at a complete spectrum, and I think that's what the Commission is doing of the whole tax base, mm-hmm. and not just one particular part of it either. So, but I absolutely do not disagree that we shouldn't, as a group, look. We've been presented a lot of things to look at, but we also need to have in mind that there's other things besides health that provide the base for the tax revenue.
You're absolutely correct. My other suggestion was that after we talk about some of the options, that we'd have a quick overview of the separate accounting.
Why not?
Senator Lyson.
Mr. Chairman, that's one thing I was going to request. I know I read about newspapers. Sam Cotton has put out a number of papers on a particular subject, but as I see the scenario, we were, in litigation over separate accounting, and back in, when was it, 79, whatever it was, we changed to this new method, and at that particular time we picked up ELP, and a lot of us were under the assumption, and I think rightly so, that we were told by people at Barton Revenue and others that it was a neutral tax bill. It was a backup, was a guarantee that we wouldn't have to go back if we did lose a court case, and that was one of the concerns of the legislature at that time. And inasmuch as it was a neutral revenue bill, we substituted one for the other to reduce the risk on the part of the state. But since that particular time, of course, we have won that case, as I understand it. And the question I have, if in fact that was a fair method of taxation, that's questionable also, I suspect, but it was legal, that and the assumption that was revenue neutral did not prove out. There's other circumstances. Could you provide us with a scenario showing the revenue flows if we had continued on with separate accounting versus getting into the ELF and all these other complicated formulas, and show us what the bottom line is on that?
We are actually working on a very comprehensive
study. We
could
have that.
Separate accounting worldwide and watershed proportionate. So.
And what the effect on Alaska revenues was at, from that particular time till now.
Yeah, exactly. And what you know, we even project into the future. But we are working on that right now, the research section.
Representative Sun and Representative Martin.
Well, yeah. Mr. Chairman, this I kind of take a broader perspective, and I appreciate Jordan bringing up the fact that we ought to look at the whole picture. But I kind of started out my morning here, got on a bad note before you guys got here, with an oil and gas meeting and some testimony we had about local hire. And I'm not one to link things together or anything, but I think we do have a big picture here to look at. And we got some, I'm going to give this document here to you, George, but we had some testimony here, like, going on the slope up there now. We have one of the biggest sea lifts in the history of the slope coming in, and yet we have a large unemployment factor in this state. And here's a telecopy from Sin Brown and Root, from someone down south. There's three electricians and electrician's helper arriving in Anchorage on August 24th. Get a fitness card on the 25th. He's to get $405 deducted from his first payroll check to pay for his airplane fare up here. These lady has two more electricians in Moses Lake, Washington, waiting to go to Alaska, waiting to hear the reservations have been made. And a list of 70 individuals here that are working on the slope that are all from out of state with their names, where they're from, social security numbers. And these aren't real experienced workers. An electrician's helper isn't all that highly qualified of a position. You get paid $12.95 an hour, that's about $1,000 a week up there. And I got friends of mine sitting in Ketchikan who would fit this bill that can't get a job, and they can't get a call out up there, and they can't get to work. And I think it's a pretty serious problem. And I don't know what really to do about it, but the only money that comes from oil that ever gets to my end of the country either comes from people in my people working up there, or comes through state government. And I guess that's why I say, well, we need to get our fair share of the oil, and maybe we can parcel it around. But this whole local hire thing and all of the rhetoric coming out saying we are hiring locally and we're going to take care of it and we're going to police ourselves and we don't need this legislature to pass laws and people work.
Right. Well, I didn't want to mix apples and oranges to deal with since you've already. I had the same problem in my town, and 302 is no angel. We have a lot of union people right in this town that are competing against Seattle and Oregon union people that want jobs all around the state. But I think that's an entirely different issue, and we know that the statistics that the Department of Labor gave us show that there's a lot more out-of-state hire being done in other aspects of our local, of our total workforce than just the oil industry. But I wanted to get back into this report, the separate accounting and things like that, as Mr. Larson has done, and I want to refer you to a report that Representative Clarkson had done through House Research. And even though I had my own biases, I thought that the report that he did and House Research did was probably the best balanced one I have read, showing the present and the future of apportionment taxation and separate accounting. It was well, well done. I'd like to refer that one to you. And yes, there is a point when we talk about neutrality. There was a point where there was neutral, but then we can say one part of the problem that no one was looking at until these people got into it was at what level of oil price are we talking about, and they did take that into consideration. And it's one of the best reports I saw. At certain price levels, separate accounting is the greatest thing for Alaska. At other price level, apportionment tax, we better well leave it alone. Like right now, apportionment tax is better for us.
Okay, before we go much further, we ended with my comments in relation with what our tentative schedule would be next time. we got off to several other topics. I was suggesting that this committee sit down and talk about some of the options in dealing with health. You know, whether we want to extend it another 10 years on Prudhoe Bay, whether we want to abolish it, and just lay out all the options that we have and just generally kick it around. Naturally, there's such a tie-in with Separatist County that we probably should have an overview of Separatist County so that this committee can become knowledgeable in it and then give a further discussion on it as to and try to compare it with some of our conclusions that we come out of our discussion next time on the Elf. That was the only comment I made. I probably didn't put it across as clearly as I should have. Probably still have. I mean, this is a hard animal to get a hold of when you're talking about the tax policy structure of the state of Alaska or any state. Is there any disagreements with that tentative schedule? Senator Ferguson probably will be chairing that.
You going to Montana again?
No.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It isn't like we've got to make a decision in the next 2 weeks. We've got a couple of years to do this, or a year, whatever it takes. And I believe that all the information that we can get a hold of it and understand will help us make these decisions. Without it, we're fumbling around in the dark. Could make some mistakes. I would like to see that happen. Secondly, I can appreciate the local hire situation, but I don't believe that this committee is the place to put it up. With all due respect to Representative Sun, and that get a response from anybody from the committee regarding that, I think my opinion would be a call for, because we are an oil and gas committee. Understand the relationship. Mr. Speaker, I wrote down a question a long time ago. I'd like to ask that question if it would be appropriate to do that at this point in time for Mr. Monk, if I may. It has to do with the
floor.
Mr. Monk, when you stated very eloquently that when the lights go out and somebody probably forgets to turn them on as they leave, and the severance tax and the ELF and everything is just kind of kaput, we'll say, it doesn't produce any income for us whatsoever. I wonder, do you have any idea what the oil companies are going to be doing at this time? Are they going to cap everything? Are they going to go home? What happens to the oil in the ground? Is it going to remain there? Or are they going to continue to make profits if they can't, if it goes down to nothing? And that, what happens is that they can't afford to produce it because the oil prices are lower than they can produce it for.
Well, actually, I did sort of answer your question, not directly, but the severance tax disappears, you know, as wellhead price goes down. We lose out completely on severance taxes. Before, the oil companies would have a motive to shut down production. The oil companies make money not only on production, but also on transport, on refining, on distribution, on retail sales. So while it may cost as much to get that oil to market as it does, as the oil is worth, so you have zero wellhead value, zero value at the point of production, the oil companies can still make money by refining and distributing and selling.
Well, George, would you do that to us?
What I do much.
I better rephrase that. Things are getting heated up at the end of the day here, so I better ask my question.
Well, it just seems logical that the oil companies would have to react to that situation.
Oh, yeah.
Very strongly,
That's true. And we're one of the few states that has both the severance and the way we calculate, Alaska calculates taxes, too. We also are, of the oil-producing states, have the highest tax of any state, also, by far, by real far. So if that comes about, naturally we're the industry, and I'm sure I can speak for other people along those lines, the fact that, because it's been said many times publicly, we have to look at what monies we have available. We have to go in and to our managements and convince them of that project and the economics of it in competition with other projects in other areas in the country. And if we lose out on that, that just means that we'll lose out on being able to do the projects here. So, very simple.
Mr. Chairman, let me follow up on that. I don't know how you got a seat on this committee. It seems like you got the hot seat on this committee, being a representative of the oil companies, which takes me back to your suggestion of getting information. Perhaps it'd be a good idea if we sat down, this committee sat down with the representatives of the oil companies and say, okay, guys, here we are. What do you want? This is what we want. Let's see if we can't put something together on a compromise situation so we understand their standpoint. From their standpoint, we're getting it from the Department of Revenue, etc., and I think this type of an approach will probably enlighten a lot of us on whether it be good, bad, or indifferent.
And Senator Abood, when we get to the point when this committee feels like it's going to make a recommendation, and we have a draft proposal of a recommendation, believe me, the public input and the views that you mentioned will be allowed to testify and even assist us.
But I thought that could be a kind
this
of
task isn't going to be easy.
Informal hearing as the Department of Revenue has before they get to the formal and make this figure.
Rest assured they'll be beating a door to your office. Talking about closing down fields now, what I've read, of course, I'm not very astute on the oil business, but nevertheless, I do read national magazines, and it seems to me that there are a number of fields, oil-producing fields, in states that have considerably less revenue tax burden on oil industries who are closing off production. So it's not inconceivable that any field in Alaska is vulnerable for that type of an operation for absolutely closing down. So it's a very dreary picture. And I don't think, well, the economics, I suspect, would demand that at a certain point they do close, as in other states, and I don't know why we'd be any different.
Go ahead, Bart.
I don't know. I don't know that we know the technical side. It is very expensive to produce up here, but a lot of the costs are sunk. So, I mean, I don't know to what degree the technology is delayed, but as I understand, the oil companies this last year spent a lot of money developing agents to be able to pump the oil faster. And to some degree, you know, if the oil is pumping, it doesn't matter how much you get for it. With a vertically integrated industry, you know, you've got other kinds of markets where you make money, regardless of how much of oil costs. I mean, as far as them coming to talk to us, if we can't get information out of tax hearings, I doubt that we're going to get a whole lot of information about their means of doing business or the costs of doing business. It would be important to a decision like that.
But, you know, the fact remains that there's a certain point of no return, and we don't know where that is, and they'll never tell us, I'm sure.
That's right.
And when they shut down, you know.
You'll hear that squeak.
It's kind of interesting when we're not being briefed and we're just talking. what I was suggesting is that when we look at the L factor and the various options, some which could be very simple, but yet the figures with it may not be, in other words, look at the different options and how would it affect exploration, you know, how would it affect marginal fields, how would it affect the state's revenue, and just go through and we could have the staff compile all kinds of options. Probably even think of some hybrids of that. Throw our own numbers around, discuss it, look at it. Lord, I'm not suggesting we're going to make a decision next time we meet, but I think now we have a lot of material on elk. We have good presentations. We have a basic understanding of it. Between now and then, we could do our own personal research and looking at it and come back here and see what type of discussion we can get out of it. Throw everything out.
What time frame were you figuring about another meeting?
Well, I haven't talked to Senator Ferguson, but I think it'd probably be once again like the phone poll that we had, setting maybe the first part of October sometime in there, any time between the 10th
and the... You're thinking about the votes the 10th of October or something like that we can zero in on? I don't want to take a vacation when you call.
That would be fine to start with, to start and take a poll.
We've got a real problem between the 2nd and the 8th.
Well, November
5th. Any time out of the 8th, after the 8th.
Definitely. Can we tentatively say, what day is the 10th of October?
Friday.
The 10th of October.
Oh, okay, the week.
That one's
Friday.
Mm-hmm. And after the 10th would be fine with me.
Is there any problem or suggestion of using the 10th of Frank?
No problem.
10th of when?
Of October.
It's a Friday. Second week in October.
Well, I'll put that in the fish. I'll be gone by then.
I think Representative Sun might have a problem. How about if we poll people on a date after the 10th, but no later than the 15th?
Okay.
You are.
Before Alaska Day.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Well, we worked out holidays before, haven't we?
No, that one.
You can't work them out.
No way.
Sunday's the only one that celebrates Alaska Day.
Mr. Chairman, if I may say one other thing, there is no way. Senator Ferguson and I have been through this process a number of times, tinkering with the text, and over the years. And there's a wealth of information in the archives. Just the arguments that were prevailed at that time are still legitimate arguments now as it relates to taxation as it pertains to developing the field. So all the same arguments are the same. The time is different, but the basic arguments are there. And, you know, your staff could take a lot of that out, and I think it would be of value.
One more statement.
One last thing, Mr. Gilmore. I certainly want to thank Mr. Monkman and his crew for the backup information they've given us and all the questions that we asked you. It seems to me that you answered 100% of them. I appreciate the research you've done for the many things we do at you. Did a good job. We'll be instant experts.
I just note that the price of oil for Senator Eliason and Senator Ferguson, the price of oil is almost the same as when you guys dealt with it in the 70s.
We thought we solved the problem.
Is there anything else that a member would like to bring before this body before we adjourn? Okay, we'll try to get a hold of you anywhere between October 10th and October 15th and see where we can get the most of us here.